This here Major Spoilers podcast is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIPs from around the world. VIP stands for Very Important People, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you. If you would like to help Major Spoilers create more content for you, please visit members.majorspoilers.com and become a VIP member today. I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. You know what? I think everyone's got a good feel for 5th edition.
Or at least the first two levels.
Yeah. I guess that's, you know, we could continue and go on through this whole prepackaged campaign, but, you know, we want to get into the other part of the off-season and then back into the regular show, and so we don't want to drag this on for a full year. Many of you who've been playing 5th edition have probably already cracked open or probably got the that first prepackaged campaign, The Lost Mines of Phandelver.
That's the starter set campaign?
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people have probably played that. And so I'm sure your comment sections are filling up with, oh, you guys didn't do that right, or maybe you did do something right, because in this last adventure we found Gundren pretty darn quick, Rob.
Yes. Yeah, you guys, was it Rodrigo's idea to scout out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, Rodrigo came up with the plan to scout around the castle before going in instead of charging in head first.
Right.
And because of that, you guys dealt with 4 rooms instead of 14 rooms.
Wow. Lucky us.
Because you got lucky enough to find the hidden entrance in the north side of the castle.
Yeah. Very cool.
I just figured we should keep going until we stopped hearing the phrase arrow slits.
Yeah.
Those were everywhere.
Yeah.
Those were literally they were supposed to be like one every 10 feet or 15 feet on the castle walls.
You know, it is too bad that we didn't play. I mean, I'm sure after this we would have hit level 3.
Oh, yeah. Really, you guys were like 5-10 experience away from level 3, but I didn't do the math early enough to
get that information to us in between games.
Because you're right, because that is where in 5th edition things open up and you start taking paths and start doing a bunch of different things.
Yes, you got accepted into college.
Hooray!
Yay.
Lore you!
Go
books!
Yes.
But did you guys think you've got a good feel for the way this game handles? I mean,
probably not. I think, like, there's to every version of D&D, like, there are tiers.
Right.
There's, you know, that moment probably around third level where you start getting actually getting your powers.
Yeah.
There's, you know, in previous editions, there's this thing around, like, eighth level where, like, your character's highly survivable. They have all of the features that they're going to have. They're just kind of haven't picked up. And also, you've had enough levels to have enough options to make enough decisions to have your character be less of a cookie cutter and more the way that you want it to play.
Well, we can continue on this adventure.
We do want to get back to to the main game.
Well, honestly, at the rate we're going, in order to get through the rest of just this beginner's campaign, it would probably take us another 6 months.
These games.
Do you know, Rob, after we get to the mines, what's next?
The mine is actually the last thing in there.
Oh.
All the side quests and everything that you guys have written down are what's supposed to get you a chunk of the game time.
Yeah, which is crazy. Because
so
it's
what the level way that are we supposed to be at by the time we get to the mines?
By the time you get to the mines, I don't know. I'd have to go through and calculate. It doesn't actually say what levels you guys should be at. It just has
probably the
experience you've gained.
We're supposed to like get up to fifth level?
Yeah, fifth level through this. So by the end of that, we should either be at or above fifth level.
Yeah,
I think that the biggest feeling that I have about fifth edition is one of deja vu.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like previous editions. It's wide open in ways that previous editions were that I'd kind of gotten used to not having open throughout our 4th edition campaign. And starting out 5th edition, I didn't like that. I was actually surprised to find, you know, you may remember years and years ago my complaining about how do I function with fighter powers being powers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not the mage, but now that I don't have them, I kind of feel like my narrative is slipping. I feel like it's, you know, it's something different enough to where, oh yeah, I have to remember how to do this all myself.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, there's a fighter path that you could have started taking that actually gives you spells.
Yes.
Ooh, that sounds really awful.
It's also why Malagog's intelligence is reasonable.
In case you wanted to go that route.
Yeah, don't dump stat my dexterity, man.
I think there are some things that I like so far about 5th edition that I think really work. I think combat seems a little bit more streamlined, although it does. Really not a fan of the for the spellcasters, how you have to worry about cones and cubes and cylinders and all that kind of stuff.
I don't like that, you know.
Especially for something that's supposed to take place all in your mind.
The targets have to roll saving throws sometimes. Yeah. And
that's a whole thing that you can get into with Dungeons & Dragons in general, right? There's this... So D&D is like the progenitor of most role-playing games that you're going to find, most tabletop role-playing games. So there are things about D&D that are like kind of weirdly prehistoric, like having armor class and also saves and also like other ways to avoid things.
Yes.
Whereas most other games will have kind of like attack and static defenses and only that. Some games only say, well, the only ones that ever roll are the players. So the players roll both their attacks and their defense, and the monsters never, and like your enemies never roll.
Yeah.
Right.
Or it's always like an attack and there's always a dodge roll, right? There's games where no matter what part of your soul or face something is targeting, you get to roll a defense.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I also, you know, like I said, the combat is very streamlined, but there are some things that I really don't like, and as I've been grousing for, I don't know, what, 3 months now, this whole critical hit thing, I'm still somewhat disappointed in.
I agree.
Because you could hit two ones in your double rolls, and you could not hit, you can, my mighty axe comes down and hits and has a mighty critical hit, and you give him a paper cut.
Yeah,
essentially in damage.
I would say that the combat is generally streamlined, but it's not all that much more streamlined, and it's not as engaging as 4th edition is for me combat-wise. So it's mostly a loss as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I feel like there's too much less going on in combat.
Yes, and that's my biggest complaint about it, too, is, you know, people have been telling me specifically, oh, this will be more to your speed because there aren't so many rules.
I thought it would be, honestly.
Well, and to some degree that is true, but there's a point where, like Rob said, I feel like the combat is actually almost unstructured to the point of, you know, some of it feels counter to narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point, the we had the discussion of, well, somebody's in between you and him. Oh, well, ignore that. You just go right past them.
Yeah.
Well,
There is the issue that this is a very low-level thing.
Yeah.
So we're used to playing relatively high-level stuff for Critical Hit now. We have for a while in 4th edition. So the monsters in 4th edition get more gimmicks as they go.
Yeah.
These monsters have almost no gimmicks to them except for like the owl bear who gets to attack twice.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you recall in early levels of 4th edition, about probably half the monsters are going to have something to them, and the majority of them aren't going to have much.
And I'm cool with that too. I mean, yeah. I also like that you're not trying to attack 50 different stats in combat. True. You're attacking just one stat, and that's it. At least in this level.
You're not attacking 50 different stats.
Right.
You know,
well, you guys and
wizards.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And again, wizards have a thing where maybe they're rolling an attack roll, a magic attack roll, or maybe they're going to have the bad guy roll a save throw to see if they magic hits or not.
I'm glad that in the Dungeon Master's Guide, that they kind of started to address how you bring in some of the races that were original to 4th edition, like the Eladrin. I don't remember in the guide anything about Artificer, so Randus would still be lost to time. And
Artificer
space.
Will show up in Eberron.
Oh, I'm
presumably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's where it's like Artificer came about originally in Eberron when Eberron was made for third edition.
In third edition, they came out in Eberron.
I miss skills challenges, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Although, again, remember, the skill challenges, the way they appear on Critical Hit are...
Oh, I know. I know they're different, but they have nothing like that here to where you can help push the narrative along with a skills challenge as opposed to something else.
That's something easily house-ruled, and there may... I did not look at the DNG close enough to see if they had something... like that structured in there.
Right. Now, keep in
that
mind...
that they very well could have. They did have some subsystems, like for chases and whatnot.
Right.
So, it's probably in that chapter somewhere.
Yeah.
So, just so people who are aware, at the time of this recording, the Dungeon Master's Guide has not hit store shelves. We have looked at a Dungeon Master's Guide that was sent to us from Wizards of the Coast. So, while the guide has actually been out for 2 months... it's technically, at the time of this recording, not been released yet.
Sure.
So there's some weird timey-wimey stuff going on for you right now.
Right, wibbly-wobbly.
Adriana, what did you like or dislike about how combat is being run?
I felt like we didn't get a really actual good sampling of combat because we're second level. And I think we would have had a lot more options and stuff after third level. It's combat, I felt like it went faster, but maybe at third level it would slow down more because we would have more options.
True.
What else?
Are there some things that you really like about 5th edition?
I feel kind of ambivalent about it. It's just different to me. So I don't really feel like it's better or worse. I feel like we couldn't really give it a fair shake because we were married to this canned adventure.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit too.
But honestly, like there were problems with it, but I feel like 4th edition also has issues.
Oh, sure.
So yes. I can't even say like, oh well, this one sucks compared to 4th edition. I felt generally speaking, like, if I had started with this, then I'd be like, okay, this is a thing I'm familiar with. It felt like the same. I think combat was, like, a little bit easier, but
yes.
I've also been playing D&D for, like, however many years now.
When Trell first came in, she came in at, what, like, 11th level?
Yeah. Exactly.
So she came in with all the baggage.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that I hate 5th edition. I mean, it's fun, and there are certainly some cool things about it. I just, I don't know, there's just some things that, oh man, why did they do that? Because in my mind, it kind of cripples 5th edition system.
The biggest complaint is the critical hit mechanism. I think that's the biggest letdown.
That's an easy thing to house rule.
You could also house rule it.
Yeah. Here's something different. And that's the interesting thing is that the critical hit system, as our computers will tell you, is actually in general you're going to be dealing more damage like over time more often than not. Because statistically, you're rolling two dice instead of just maximizing one die, right?
Yes, right.
So what I'm saying is it doesn't feel like a big deal.
Right. Yeah.
Rolling two dice and potentially rolling two ones doesn't feel as big of a deal as getting max damage.
Right. Yeah.
You get max damage, it's max damage.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
The feel of something and the funness of something is actually a big thing in gaming.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to know if something is going to be fun or not.
Yeah.
and whether something feels like a letdown or not. And frankly, that's the only thing I felt like was a letdown, other than being like my problems with this were almost completely the fault of the canned adventure, except for the critical.
We have never played a canned adventure in Critical Hit, and mm-hmm. Wizards of the Coast, I would guess, makes a lot of money off of canned adventures because it's something that you just buy off the shelf, you crack it open, you sit down on a Friday mm-hmm. night with your friends, and you roll through the whole thing. That being said, I think that the canned adventure feels very constraining.
Yeah. I would agree.
I felt it was like the biggest problem because I was explaining this to Kristen the other night, what it was like working with the canned adventure, and when you're playing a video game, there's a certain video game logic to things that you put up with. And the benefit of a tabletop role-playing game where the computer is a human being is that mm-hmm. you don't have to put up with that shit.
Yeah, right.
And but this was basically us putting up with a lot of garbage that didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And, detracts from the inherent submersive quality of the game.
Yeah. Right.
And really, I think in every way, shape, and form, fought against, the benefits of playing a tabletop game.
Yeah, I think nothing against you, Rob, but I think if you're going to open up one of these canned adventures, you as the dungeon master or the game master for that session, you need to be thoroughly versed in everything that's in that thing top to bottom, or because otherwise
just use it as a loose inspiration
and feel free
to wing as much of it as you would in a normal game anyways.
You could do that, but you could have somebody like Rodrigo trip a quest. And if you're not familiar with that bit, in fact, you even said that after our first session that because we didn't examine those horses mm-hmm. and follow the paths and look around, we skipped over a huge part of stuff that you weren't prepared for us to deal with.
Right.
I've run a canned adventure thing, and it took me about 3 seconds to toss it out the window because of this exact problem. It's almost impossible for me to work with something that logically doesn't make sense, because that's why I have problems with comic books and any kind of form of media, is me screaming at the television set going, "That doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? It doesn't make any sense."
So this is important. I'm sorry that I didn't mean to interrupt there.
You can keep going.
Okay. Thank you. That actually depends on your crew. Critical Hit specifically, we have a very imaginative crew. We have a very creative group of people, and it can feel hugely stifling. Mm-hmm. There are groups out there who are actually very,
they want combat simulators.
Sure. Or just feel a lot of pressure coming up with new things. Some people hate being put on the spot. Well, what an adventure like this does for you is it allows you to still run a game, still run a game for your friends, and as long as everybody kind of gets together at the beginning and says, let's treat this like a video game.
Right.
So if I'm like, okay, I go off into the forest, and it's like, okay, it's not actually a forest. It's a polygon wall that is just painted to look like a forest. Go back to the adventure, and everybody goes, okay, that's not the way that we were supposed to go.
Okay. Well, right. I think the thing with Wizards of the Coast is they're trying to base everything on, and maybe they've done it in the past too, but I didn't see it in 4th edition. But I guess I kind of did in some of these original canned adventures, but with 5th edition, 5th edition it kicks off with a Tyranny of Dragons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This campaign that we started was the first little bit, the first chapter in a much longer campaign, which
right.
then spilled into Horde of the Dragon Queen, and then finally the Tyranny of Dragons storyline, mm-hmm. which all are the Rise of Tiamat, spread out. And now we're getting two more sections right. in 2015 yes. that will right. do the same thing. That'll say, here's this big thing that we're basing this whole world on.
And here's a book for players' right. rules for making characters in this adventure.
Right, right.
And
I think that's actually a marketing move.
Right.
That's yes. why that's happening, right?
Yeah.
If you look at Wizards of the Coast, like, number one most successful thing is Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. And the way that Magic the Gathering goes is they introduce a new world halfway through the year,
right,
halfway
right.
through the calendar year, and then they give us, like, used to be two more tastes of it before we moved on to a new one. Nowadays,
now,
they're actually moving yeah. to just
two scoops
per world,
right.
which is actually going to increase the number of worlds per year.
Yes.
Matthew, have you played prepackaged campaigns before?
Awesome.
In previous versions?
Into it.
Yeah.
Pre-gen, and you know, I don't like the term canned adventure because the things that we did affected this adventure, whether
True.
We want to admit it or not.
Yes.
Pre-gens are a time-tested and, you know, well, in many ways necessary part of the gaming experience.
If,
and
I would agree. If I was playing with a bunch of people who had never played Dungeons & Dragons before, mm-hmm. I think this would be very valuable, mm-hmm. both from somebody who's a first-time dungeon master as mm-hmm. well as first-time players.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and walking into a new generation, a new system for all intents and purposes, they're absolutely necessary. Now, the one thing that I will say is that I feel like Rob handled this one really well.
Yeah.
And I think that as we all learned the game, I think this particular pre-gen adventure probably had a lot more hook, a lot more mm-hmm. hooks to it
yeah.
than we were ready to walk into.
I think it had used. Way too much hinged on yeah. side quests.
There's, right.
There's a lot going on here, and
sadly, Adrian, we couldn't go out and kill 25 boars.
Well, why? Like, the characters were hired by their friend
right,
yeah,
to come here, and their friend's been kidnapped. Why would they go right. deal with any of the other yeah. shit that's in there?
That and that's absolutely,
point.
That's what Adriana was saying, is like, logically speaking, we're like, why are we here? We're here to save our friend. Oh, by the way, right. there's a banshee with a magic comb over there. Great. Good for
nice.
Her.
Yeah,
where's my dwarf?
Yeah. They were trying to, you know, give it a sandbox feel, I think, where, you know,
which
you got all these other places you can explore.
Doesn't work for...
I mean, you like, have...
If, yeah. It would work yes. if
yeah.
it was, here's your sandbox,
yeah.
there's a few different things, not yeah. your
well,
hook. You know, not, if they didn't have that initial hook of... Your friend
of
has
some urgency,
like, hired yes. you, and
yeah.
oh, look, he's been kidnapped.
Here's what this adventure
right.
needed. If you were going to do that, this adventure
that
needs
part
a...
part needed to be resolved pretty quickly, and then all these other...
Or it needs a stopgap.
Yeah.
Basically, it needs to
yeah.
say, okay, your dwarf is in the magical mine of Phandelver,
and you need
which
to...
only opens once a year. You have 6 months to get there. It's like, oh, yeah, no way, I'm a wizard. Okay, you go, you check it. Oh, you're too low level of a wizard. You actually can't help your friend right now. Play in
right.
the sandbox
mm-hmm.
for 5 levels,
yeah.
and then the mine magically opens, and you can go save your friend, right? I mean, you can do
game.
That, but if you add that urgency,
mm-hmm.
that happens, right? In
yeah.
In the main critical hit game, you can go back and you can listen, and I try to build that urgency into things, sometimes overwhelmingly, I think.
sometimes.
And it does feel very tense, but if you think from me as a storyteller and you take that perspective, certain things are going to happen no matter what.
Yes.
If you guys take...
Right.
spend 2 days in a town, or you just basically put your heads down on a pillow for 3 seconds and then wake up and then go out, the same thing's going to happen when you get to the next town.
Right. Yeah.
But that sense of urgency can work greatly to enhance the story. In this situation, though, it actually works against the story.
Right. And we have been very spoiled as players in this campaign, because if we go, say, you know, in the middle of the battle in the celestial thing, if we were to go to Bao and say, hey, we heard about this weird side quest, Bao Balbino would like, what are you, stupid? Get back to the thing. And the thing is, with the pre-gen adventure, the king of town, his job is to go, oh, well, I also have this banshee, and I got a duck and a pterodactyl and all of this stuff going on. It's designed to keep throwing crap at you necessarily, yeah, rather than keeping you on a narrative. It's giving you, you know, many options that you can do.
Yeah.
Again, we are spoiled by having a very directed, very strong narrative, mm-hmm, in a very rich environment.
Yeah.
So I think that coming into this, I didn't hate this.
No, I didn't either. And honestly, if someone came up to me today and says, I've never played Dungeons & Dragons before, but I've listened to your critical hit, and so I'm aware of 4th edition, but I also know that there's this new 5th edition game out, or, you know, whenever, what would you recommend to do? And I would say, if you've never played Dungeons & Dragons before, go to 5th edition is what I would recommend.
I would too, actually. Yeah. Unless you very, very specifically have listened to us on critical hit and you really like the way that 4th edition sounds as compared to D&D Next.
Right.
If the mechanics actually intrigued you from Critical Hit,
go to 4th edition. If mechanically you're interested in 4th edition, then do
but
that.
But if you're just interested in playing RPG... Yeah.
Because that's the way everybody's going to be going. You're going to find the most support for D&D Next. You're going to find the most excitement in forums and online stuff for D&D Next.
Consider this my second favorite edition of D&D after 4th edition. What problems there are there seem to be present in 3rd edition... Which I considered,
but they did take a severe weed whacker to the 3rd edition problems.
Yes.
For example, like the proficiency stuff seems weird, but that's like the advancement of it is a lot tighter than it was, because in 3rd edition
and
it was like that a lot too. There's a lot of little things that got brought over, but most of them were really cleaned up.
Yes.
Now I hear there's like a giant tome of errata though that has come out.
Oh, really? I never for 5th edition? Located that. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either.
That may have been a rumor.
There is one thing that I do want to address.
I think it's only like 23 pages.
Oh, okay.
So go ahead, Matthew.
I want to address this. I have been told point blank on at least 3 occasions in social media and various places, switch to 5th edition, it's better than 4th. You're doing it wrong. You need to play 5th edition. And I want you to know, faithful spoilerites and critical hitters, I love you all. You are all my dear friends, and you know, I'll buy you a beer if I ever see you. Probably won't, because I don't actually have any money, but that's not the point. You are no longer allowed to tell me that 5th edition is automatically going to be better for me, because I've played 5th edition and I don't necessarily like it as well. So let's move on from that. It is not inherently a better system for what the Critical Hit crew does. It has its pluses, it has its minuses, but the next person who tells me that 5th edition will solve any and all of our problems, role-playing, bad breath, flat feet, all of these things, I will look you in the eye and I will call you Optimus Prime.
And it's certainly not one of those games, the systems I would avoid playing in.
I would definitely.
If someone said, "Hey, I want to run this 5th edition game," I was like, "Cool, I'll jump right in."
You know, I'm actually interested, even though I have some problems with this being very. It's not quite choose your own adventure, but it seems very leading you through everything. Mm-hmm. If someone said, "Hey, Steven, come, we're going to go play Tyranny of Dragons, or we're going to go play Horde of the Dragon Queen. Do you want to come and play?" I would be like, "Yeah, I would go and play if someone invited me to that."
Yeah, I was going to say, there's actually a bunch of reasons why I wouldn't. None of them are related to
the
D&D
to the system. Yeah.
Mine are.
You don't like it?
I did not enjoy, part of it's probably just running the canned adventure itself.
Right. And that was something that, you know, I had told Rob a long time ago that we were going to do a canned adventure because we hadn't done it, and it is part of Dungeons & Dragons, and we want to try to make this show as encompassing as possible to give everybody a feel. Originally, it was going to be, it was a Baldur's Gate canned adventure for 4th edition.
So. Yeah.
But we were at that time when 5th edition had just come out, and Rob said, "Hey, let's just make this a canned 5th edition thing." So
let's go ahead and knock two birds out.
Yeah.
And I think, Rob, there's also, you know, you have what I like to refer to as the expert's dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
You play this game because you love it, and when you love it, you learn everything about it, and you play the Rob game the best way you possibly can, and you make it all make sense because you know the rules and you know all the stuff that's going to be really awesome. Coming into a new system, I think the Rob game and your playing style is always going to be a little bit off kilter in a brand new system until you get your feet underneath you.
Yeah. I mean, part of the biggest problem I'm having with the system, there's two big problems. One is the antagonism between players and DMs.
Yeah.
It's amped up way from...
You think?
Yeah.
I think it's way amped from 4th edition.
Okay.
Where it's kind of actively... Like, the DM's supposed to actively be trying to get rid of, which part of it comes from the fact that you guys can take... At first level, you take one hit and you get down.
Right.
If I had thrown anything at you that was larger than a goblin, it would have killed you without any problems.
Oh, sure.
And more is looking at the DMG, a lot of those jerk magic items are back, like the bag of devouring, which is like a bag of holding, but it eats your stuff as you go along. And
God, I remember like when 4th edition came out, like there were people who were like, well, where's the Rost monster? And like the philosophy was like, we're not doing that stuff anymore. That's terrible. And eventually they did put a Rost monster out. But there's it turns your stuff into residuum.
Yeah.
So you can actually just go back, like hand it to your artificer and they'll like turn it back into an item.
It back into a sword.
Yep.
The other big thing that I'm not liking, and I made all the characters, I don't like the character creation.
I went through everything and people heard us talk about did a whole episode on the character.
Definitely things I would change. If I was running a game, give everyone a feat at first level and let everyone get a feat at fourth level.
Like, I like the three axes. Uh-huh. I wish background was a little more mechanically relevant.
Me too. Yes. Me too.
But I like the fact that there's three axes. There's the three axes to actually build your character on.
Right. And what he means is race, class, and background.
I dislike the fact that after that, there's very little to actually differentiate your character from another, like...
Yeah. Another fighter, wizard, whatever.
Yeah. There's very little that would be able to differentiate Malagog from any other fighter, half-orc... What a noble.
Yeah.
Like, after that, at third level, he'll pick his path, and that's it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's the last thing, other than if you sacrifice your stat bump at level 4, which requires you not multiclassing at all.
Right.
Yeah. Well, or just multiclassing in groups of 4. Yeah.
If you sacrifice your stat bump, you can then get a feat, which will allow you to differentiate yourself just a little bit further.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that I hope, and again, as of this recording, is there's not an online character builder for this yet.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing that, you know, I don't have a lot of powers compared to, say, you guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or even the different kinds of weapons that... Matthew and Adriana can wield, but the one thing that I liked a lot about the character builder is it would print out your cards for you.
Yeah.
So that you had them in easy access.
That's in and of itself is a weird thing. There are things in this edition that should really be powers, and if they were presented as powers with keywords and tags and like a stat breakdown, the way that powers in 4th edition were, they would be a lot stronger, but I feel that there was this deliberate
pullback.
Yeah, this deliberate, like, graphic idea.
Distancing.
Yeah, to distance themselves from 4th edition.
And the only reason I say that is because we have to keep flipping through our player's handbook to find where are all of our powers at and what are they doing and those kinds of
because,
things.
Because, for example, a monk can take an attack that is a class feature, or you can take an attack that's a weapon. And eventually, depending on what kind of monk you have, you can also start casting spells.
Right.
And actually, for the bard, that's a big deal because a bard starts out as a spellcaster, but also some of their stuff are class features. And actually, as a tiefling, I get an additional spell as from my race. That is one other thing about D&D Next, that if you like spells, this is the addition for you because everything gets spells.
Yeah.
Like the way that 4th edition used powers to simulate everything, D&D Next uses the much more really kind of granular spell to do everything. To the point where, like, for example, my tieflings, they don't get a racial power.
Ability, yeah.
They just get a spell at first level and a spell at
third or fifth level.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know, Adriana, did you have trouble keeping track of what all of your abilities / powers were in this? I mean, granted, we didn't have a whole lot, but...
It would have been nicer.
Honestly, for me, it would have been nicer to have it on my stat sheet.
Yeah, I would have preferred that that we had cards that give us a rundown of what the power does.
Now,
and in general, I don't like, I don't like learning a game from a book in general. It just seems like the absolute worst way to do it.
Someone's when got to. Could,
yeah.
But, well, what I'm saying is, like, there's no reason that this shouldn't be digital. Because,
right. No, they really should have digital copies.
Well,
of this.
And you know, it's funny that you mentioned the stat cards, because when I first started playing 4th edition, I went out and bought the Wizard stat card packs. I think they had two of them or something like that, so that I could hold these in front of me. And it was not until we moved on to the
online
the Insider, to the character builder, that it would print that stuff out automatically. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, and I've wondered this since the first book came out, if Wizards of the Coast isn't going to print up cards again then go to their online system when it's ready.
I think the cards were not successful. I think the cards were not a success. Not enough people were buying the cards.
It's just, using a book is just the least efficient way to learn a system.
Yeah.
And, for example, if I'm reading something and I'm like, what does dual wielding mean? I should be able to click that word takes me to the definition, or it should be like a hover that it's so the perfect thing to be utilized in a digital manner and it's not.
Yeah.
Like really, I really think Wizards of the Coast, I mean, maybe 7th edition or whatever, will do this.
No, but, I mean, you're right, because 4th edition... Yeah, 4th edition, they promised all this digital stuff, and it took forever for them to roll it out. Right. Like, it's clearly...
What they should have sold you should have been, like, an app or access to the website that, like, shows you a character builder, and, like, you explore and learn how to play the game that way, because it is just...
They were working with a company. They were working with a company to develop that, and then it fell through. Something fell through on that.
They are based in Seattle. Well, technically not Seattle, but they're based in land of digital programmers, in Tech City, right? And it's just ridiculous that I'm using a book and that this isn't as easy as it possibly could be.
I think there's two things that's working against them digitally. One, I think a lot of the nerds, a lot of the people that they're really trying to sell the game back to, would have been livid if they didn't get their hardbound books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, listen, make a hardbound book is for when things can be more set in stone.
Yes.
You have way more leeway with errata and things when things are digital. You can update in real time. Make a hardbound book, but do it after, think about all the beta testing they could have done with a digital method.
And this, this edition was in beta for 2 years
actually,
almost.
Like, here's the thing. You're right. And that is kind of what they did, but it wasn't the release of the game. It was the beta of the game.
Yeah.
So, it's like they kind of did it right, and then they were like, okay, now that we've done it right, let's go back and do it wrong.
Yeah. Because and they're probably right in the fact that it wouldn't quite have sold as well to all the people that they wanted to sell it to.
The hardcore people.
Yeah. The hardcore nerds want that book. It doesn't matter if it's harder or anything else. They want that physical book.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The other thing that they've got going is they believe that digitally it's going to be a lot easier to pirate.
Yeah.
They're not going to make the same level of money.
You just need to put things in place for that. And you just have to,
sometimes it's very hard to convince old school people.
This is kind of like a two-pronged thing.
Yeah.
One, pirating is actually not bad for your game.
Right.
Okay. Economically, it is literally not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two, because that means that what?
More people are
getting
aware of
the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been proven that piracy actually helps sales of
content. It does. Mm-hmm. So, I want to try out.
Good.
I think it's ridiculous the price point they had in, on these books.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
holy crap.
You want to try out a new game for that much money?
$150
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that's why they have the beginner's box.
Well, and that's
whatever. So, that is, I don't care.
So, yeah. So that's the. That's the interesting thing, that we see this over and over again, right? It's like the music industry goes digital, kicking and screaming. And once they get that settled...
It's bank.
Sure. And then we see that in comics. And right now, that's happening in comics. Kicking and screaming into Comixology, into digital delivery services so hard. And like they can't look over one medium and say, oh, look, this already happened. Let's just borrow that model and figure it out. I mean, obviously, there are people within the industry that are doing that, but everybody's fighting them.
Like, profit no margin on this game, books.
I was going to say, I'm sorry, the profit margin on a print book is relatively small, which is why they have to pump the price up to $50. Mm-hmm. They could charge $25 for an electronic app and then just make money hand over fist.
Right.
I mean, this game could have been sold as an app. Like, think about all the like apps that people make for Dungeons and Dragons just to like play it. There's no reason that Wizard can't be supplying those things and feeding information to a DM app or a player's app, a character builder app.
That lets you
dress up your frigging character. It's really obvious, and it kind of saddens me to like.
and you're right. We are not going to see that until 7th edition because
I know
it is going.
I'm not
to...
even
going to
say 6th. I'm going to say 7th.
Yeah,
it's interesting though. I mean, it's interesting that you say that though, because now the Magic the Gathering app came out with 20. Was it 3 years ago? It came out 3 years ago when that.
Which one? Because you've got Duels of the Planeswalker.
Which one came out 3 years ago.
The video game that's kind of, and it came out more than three. That came out like 5 or 6. The first one?
Yeah, whichever one came out on my iPad.
The second was Duels 2013.
But
you've also got Magic the Gathering Online, which has been around for a decade and a half at this point.
Like, in which you can play actual Magic the Gathering.
Just straight up play the game.
You're buying digital cards, which is...
I'm just saying that it's interesting that, you know, Magic the Gathering has made its transition over to the app side so that more people can play it and buy your digital cards and all that other stuff. This could be the same way. And if they're looking for in-app type purchases, hey, here is a Mordenkainen's sword. That'll be 99 cents if you want to unlock that and use it in your game and get all those stats.
But again, you see this happen in every industry, right? Yeah. And like what you're seeing now in D&D is happened yesterday in comics, is this idea like we need to do this, we need to bring back the Silver Age so that we can retain all of those old comic fans instead of
new people.
What can we do to attract new people? Mm-hmm. How can we make this easier to access so that people get in it? And it takes basically you scraping your belly against the bottom for them to be like, oh no, new people, okay, we're down with new people.
Yeah.
And all I know is my oldest son wants to play this.
Oh.
Yeah.
He did Wrath of Ashardalon with us, and he's hooked. He's been asking about it. But it's like, there's a lot of reading that goes on, and so that may be a barrier of entry, although...
He's super smart, though.
He's super smart. I think he would... I mean, he schooled Rob on how to play his character when we did Wrath of Ashardalon. He was like, no, Rob, you want to do this?
Yeah.
Nice.
I know that he would love to sit down on his iPad and read through everything on an iPad as opposed to carrying around three giant books that are twice the size that he is.
And, I was gonna say, he gets all
Dungeons
three books and he's going to be being able
He'll
to move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons, though, is one of those RPGs that would especially lend itself to a digital model.
Oh, completely.
Because so much of the book is irrelevant to whatever particular player or character you're playing at the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
You don't need large portions of that.
Matthew, you've been quiet for a while. Anything you'd like to add into this
with
conversation?
Class-based design.
Do you think it should be electronic, or do you think it should still stay in print, or both, or what?
I think it has to be both. And the reason that it has to be both. You have to have the book for the people that need the book. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with Adriana. We should be able to just click and have the thing come up. Or, if you have a particular thing, you bring up the power and it says, oh, and here's the relevant information and stats that you need. Because going through the player's guide when Rob sent me the character sheet, trying to figure out what in the hubs of hell all of these things meant.
Yes.
You know, there were some definite moments, but I think that there's also a little familiarity to these arguments. These ain't new arguments.
Oh, right. No.
We were arguing about whether or not you actually had to have that hard copy in 1987. There was a digital copy then, but you can point. And I think that the most important thing to remember is whatever you like best is the way it needs to go for you. But there are thousands and thousands of people who may be playing differently. And so I think that it's in Wizards of the Coast's best interest to make it as available mm-hmm. in as many formats as they rationally can.
But they're not doing
that.
You
can't please everybody. But yeah, I think they do need to make sure that they diversify because there are different strata right now.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, it... If they're going to do that, if they're going to make it as available as possible, it can't be an afterthought.
No.
And right. with 4th edition, I think there was that idea that mm-hmm. they were going to do it. They were just going to do it. It's going to be digital, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that. And the moment that somebody was like, hey, here's the PDF for that to another person, they freaked out.
Yeah.
They totally freaked out. And thankfully, out of that, we got the character builder, which we here at Critical Hit use extensively. We rely on it hugely because I can't possibly expect everybody to have those books available to them, especially after Wizard was like, oh, no more PDF copies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's so difficult. And there's so much great D&D stuff that you can use, and you're completely capped by that. And we are more than willing to pay $70 a year.
$71 a year with tax.
Right. To just have that.
Renewed.
Yeah.
We're perfectly happy to pay that much money over and over again, which eventually over the lifetime of an edition is probably more than we would have normally spent on books anyway.
Yeah. And we're buying the books anyways.
And we're buying books like that. And we're giant nerds, and we're buying the books anyway because we like the pictures.
Yeah.
Yes. At least I do.
Especially this edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The 5th edition has an amazing gorgeous art in it. And so the Monsters Manual is so
can't,
cool.
It can't be an afterthought. And at this point, it kind of still feels that way. Mm-hmm. There's this idea that is like, eventually we'll come out with this like virtual tabletop stuff and all this stuff. But it's like, if it was a priority, it would have been there at launch. Yes. And if it wasn't there at launch, if it was a priority, they would have been like, hang on, guys, I'm sorry. We can't release D&D Next yet because the digital platform for it is not ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will refrain from getting into any kind of Silverlight issue because I think they hitched their wagon to Silverlight and that backfired on
anybody who hitched their wagon NBC to Silverlight was
NBC screwed themselves with the Olympics. So
tried to reach cross platform compatibility and
Yep. Anything else that we want to talk about? 5th edition, a canned adventure. I think there's a lot of positive things. And honestly, if you're a new player, just jump into 5th edition.
Yeah, and I think that we're by no means being like, oh, boo, 5th edition, yay, 4th edition. I think okay, so besides Rob.
To some degree,
Is anybody else just totally crap on 5th edition?
Not crap.
I'll say this. My roles in 5th edition were nowhere near as good as they were in 4th.
And that's 4th better. And that's rolling two dice half the time.
Yeah.
No lie.
Yeah. I mean, it's for Critical Hit, we had always planned to go back to 4th edition anyway for the rest of the campaign. If you were hoping that we were going to play D&D Next and then we're going to be like, oh my God, you guys, this is so much better. Let's do this instead. That wasn't ever going to happen.
No.
Sorry to disappoint you there. Feel free to keep playing D&D Next. I mean, we field whatever questions about like Pathfinder, like as long as they're like game questions, like story questions and stuff, we'll be more than happy to talk to you about D&D Next as well. And now that we have a little bit more experience with it, like I've actually now that I have the book, I've been fielding questions from Twitter and Tumblr about D&D Next because I can reference it, and you know, they're always written the same way, you know, 4th edition, 3rd edition, they're always written in that like weird nerdies.
Yes.
That is actually difficult for some people to access. So we're more than happy to break that down for you.
So that is our journey so far into 5th edition and to a canned campaign. We're going to be back next week with something totally different. We hope you enjoy it. You're going to have to wait until next week to find out what it is. But I think some people have been asking us about it for a while, right? Yeah. But I will tell you, it's not Pathfinder. Okay?
Right.
Just so you don't get your hopes up too high and have them come crashing down next week when it's not Pathfinder. It's not Pathfinder.
I don't think this group is ever going to touch Pathfinder.
No, I don't think so. Not in this.
But it is something that people have been asking for. Tune in next week. You'll get the whole lowdown, the whole skinny with everybody else, and I hope.
Assuming it's not a mailbag.
Well, you're right.
We squeeze a mailbag in there.
Okay, so next week mailbag.
No, I think we'll jump right into the next thing, is the second half of the season, which is Brian, who's in charge of the second half of the season. So tune in next week for that. Thank you so much for listening to our comments. I'm sure you have some comments about our comments. The place where you can share those comments is at majorspoilers.com. Go to the podcast posting page for this episode. Some people have commented to me that's like, oh, Steven, by the time I go to comment on this episode, the front page, it's already three pages deep. So, majorspoilers.com/criticalhit. That's where you can find the archive for all of these episodes, and that's where you can find the most recent episode. You can click on that. You can go into the comment section, and you can post your comments as much as you like, maybe you'll get a response from us or from other people who come and visit the site as well. If you've been playing 5th edition, if you've been playing the starter set, if you've been doing all of those kinds of things, I'd love to hear from you on this. So use the comment section over there. If you have questions for a future mailbag podcast at majorspoilers.com. And until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.